All right. Hello and welcome back to Oncology Decoded, where cancer science meets clarity. I'm with my co-host Ben Garmazy. Ben, it must be a Friday since we're doing a recording. That's where our recordings always are.
As per
So
usual, just can't wait to get out and not see your face for another week. Enjoy the weekend. No, I'm just kidding. We love your face,
you're so fortunate to see me, Ben. They should be
man.
so lucky. Anyway, we are so fortunate to have today two guests with us, Dr. Damien Soares and Dr. Mike Lattanzi, a urologist and medical oncologist. And we will be talking about PET PSMA imaging and prostate cancer. We are so grateful for all of your support and encouragement to do this podcast. And we're really happy to have you follow us on X at Oncology Decoded. Please email us at podcast@oncologydecoded.com. Happy to answer any questions. With that, Ben, and we'll have our co-host introduce himself today. Dr.
Yeah,
Schwartz?
Oh, sorry, Dr. Schwartz, our co-host, right? I
Yeah.
thought he was
Oh, I
our
guess.
guest
Okay.
keynote. So you
Well,
did
he's our co-host today, along
the
with Dr. Lattanzi.
So Damien's been upgraded now. So you're the boss, Damien. So go ahead, introduce yourself. Let us know who you
Yeah.
are.
Damien Soares, I am a clinical urologist in Denver, Colorado. I'm in private practice with Colorado Urology. I lead the advanced prostate cancer centers for our group. I order a ton of PSMA scans. We do not have a PSMA scanner, so some of the things we may be talking about, I may have no control over. I'm here to sort of hopefully lend a real world on the boots clinical perspective of a urologist.
Great. And then I'm Mike Lattanzi. I lead the Prostate and Urologic Cancer Research Program for Texas Oncology, one of the largest community-based oncology practices in the United States. We do offer in-house PSMA PET. We also offer kind of the full spectrum of clinical trials, phase one through phase three. We all see kind of the full spectrum of hematology and oncology. I happen to have a particular focus in prostate and bladder and kidney cancer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great, right? What we're seeing is a representation of how patients with prostate cancer are going to be treated in the community. We have urology, we have medical oncology, we have Tennessee, Colorado, and Texas, all kind of on this call here to give a varied perspective. And I think this is critical because the way patients are treated in academia versus the community is different. In academia, you have urologists, medical oncologists, radiation oncologists, all kind of under one roof. One, similar payer, right? That whatever that university system is. Here we are across practices. We're sharing care, different tax IDs, different models, different incentives, but with the shared goal of taking that patient in front of us and getting them the best care they can from a multidisciplinary setting. So I think we're going to talk about that. We're going to see if there's differences. There may not be differences, right? It may all be the same. And if so, that's a great consensus, uniform kind of statement that we'll come out with this podcast. But I think I'm excited today because, I'm getting to meet someone new, and that's always great. But also because, I think this is going to be representative of the real world. So Manoj, why don't you start driving the bus forward and let's get into it.
Yeah, so I, why don't we ask actually, our guests as well as you, what do you guys do for your patients that are newly diagnosed with prostate cancer now? So you have somebody that's presenting to you in clinic, regardless of Gleason score, regardless of age, how are you approaching them? What does your typical conversation look like, and what do you tell them from a basic standpoint? Why don't we start with Mike first, and then we'll go to Damien after that.
So when I see a new prostate cancer patient in clinic, I think important to recognize, like Ben highlighted, we are a separate practice from the large urology practice we tend to share patients with here in the Austin metro. When I do see a new prostate patient, it's because they're referred by that urology practice. And there's different urology practice patterns across the United States. I'm sure Damien can speak to this. Some urology practices are very hands-on in terms of managing ADT, maybe even managing ARPIs, maybe even having their own PSMA PET scanner in-house, and we'll do a lot of that work up independently. When I tend to see these patients who are newly diagnosed, it's usually from a urologist that doesn't necessarily do a lot of that stuff in-house and prefers to collaborate with, an oncology specialist to help facilitate workup, as well as to help facilitate some of the systemic therapy, which can be somewhat nuanced. So when I see a newly diagnosed patient, the first is just risk stratification. Typically, if they're seeing me, it's because the urologist thought that they were sufficiently high risk to at least warrant a staging PSMA PET. And usually that PSMA PET is either already been ordered by the urologist by the time the patient sees me, and less commonly, I'm the one ordering the PSMA PET for staging. And my conversation with the patient is, around, one, we need to get this staging scan so that we can give you kind of an accurate treatment plan and, more accurately or precisely kind of prognosticate in conjunction with Gleason score and other factors. I try to prepare patients for, ambiguity in terms of PSMA PET. I explain that it's, a very highly sensitive scan, that, maybe 10 years ago without PSMA PET, we wouldn't necessarily have found certain, small metastatic foci. But now with this new sensitive modality, we're finding a lot of new oligometastatic or low volume metastatic disease. And I do try to prepare
Mike, I'm
patients.
going to interrupt you for a second before we get on to that sensitivity standpoint. We'll get there in a second. I'm just curious to know how Damien would approach this as well as Ben, and then we can figure out like how do you figure out the false positive? When are you using your conventional imaging? Are you using them at all, Damien?
So I'll just make it easy. I do a lot of, I see the more of a spectrum of prostate cancer than an oncologist because I'm seeing the active surveillance patients, the low-risk patients, who are probably the vast majority. So, I just put people, first thing I do, look at the patient, healthy, not healthy, age, comorbidities. Then I look at their pathology. What am I going to do? And I talk to them about that. So let's forget about all the active surveillance patients or the low-risk patients and talk about the intermediate and higher-risk patients. I try to simplify things. Patients are going to remember one or two things of the 50 things I'm going to tell them. And I want them to remember intermediate risk, we're going to treat you, you're going to do fine. High risk, we are going to throw everything at you. We undertreat high risk, that's getting better. And we overtreat low risk. That in general, urologists are getting much better at that. But I just try to have people think, where they're at and how aggressive we're going to be. And usually, most patients or a lot of patients don't understand. Even if they have high risk disease, they think they're going to die in a year. And it's I make it a very clear to everyone that, even with high risk patients, you are going to be living years and years and years and years and years and years. And that's true. Even with widely metastatically newly diagnosed disease, people are not dying in a year or 2 years for the most part.
It sounds like you're not using conventional imaging. You're using primarily
I'm
PSMA
using,
for the intermediate and high risk.
yes. So I can get down the road of the sensitivity and false positives and all that. But yeah, I am using PSMA as my default for if so, I feel someone needs imaging. And I think the vast majority of people are. We've gotten some pushback from some insurance companies in general. I feel like it was no problem, then it became a problem. And I feel like lately it's a little bit less of a problem, especially for newly diagnosed. But I see referrals, and unfortunately, people around the country are ordering PSMA scans on low-risk patients. I do see that in referrals coming in. I think people think it's perfect. It's either positive or negative, and it's not.
So Damien, can I push you on that? Right. So NCCN guidelines, right? So you have the low risk, you have intermediate low, intermediate, I guess favorable, intermediate unfavorable, high risk, very high risk. Do you have a cut point in that NCCN risk stratification where you think we order PSMA PETs for these patients and we don't order PSMA PETs for these patients? Or are you not using that kind of anything specific and it's more
No,
soft?
I am using it. In general, I'm using it. So, like
Yeah.
low intermediate or a favorable intermediate, I'm usually ordering nothing.
Okay.
No imaging at all for the most part and below. Unfavorable intermediate, usually, but it's going to depend. Like one core, 4+3, PSA's 5. I may not be ordering anything. But I go back and forth. I hate to say it, sort of depends on the week. Every once in a while, you find that weird person who has a solitary lung met or some solitary lesion somewhere you would never expect, and you find that on a PSMA scan that you never would have found on conventional imaging. But that's rare. So in general, I would say most unfavorable intermediate and above I'm ordering, but not all.
Perfect. I mean,
I'm
that's the art
curious.
of medicine, right? Manoj, are you doing that?
No, I was actually going to ask Mike that same question to get his perspective, because this is not often that we see these patients in medical oncology, but when you do see them, how are you approaching it? So instead of me, I'm going to have Mike answer the question.
Yeah, sure. I mean, so the patients that I see, who've been referred to oncology are almost exclusively unfavorable intermediate risk or higher. So I'm almost universally getting a PSMA PET on the prostate cancer patients I see, and that's simply a byproduct of the fact that I don't tend to encounter many of these low risk patients.
Yeah, I agree. I think unfavorable intermediate, most of them should get PSMA PETs. If you're not a GU specialist, I think the easy button is to just try to order it for all of those patients. If you are a specialist, I agree there's nuances and soft factors that Damien, that you're mentioning that are perfect. Probably not everyone needs one, right? But it's certainly, that's my go-to, right? When in doubt, that's kind of that cut point. I would be the first one out there to say there's not great data to support that cut point. It's just what a lot of us are doing. But nonetheless, it is interesting that we're all kind of coalescing on the same spot there, unless Manoj is going to come in and disrupt our consensus here. Manoj, are you going to go
I
ahead?
guess my question is going to be this. When are you looking at pelvic MRIs and using that as a guide to say that you need further imaging, right? When do you say that a C, you know, historically it's always been either bone scan, MRI, and then if it's not showing anything, we'll kind of either do radiotherapy and ADT, or we'll do surgery. We'll kind of figure it out based on risk factors, right? But now with this new modality of imaging, how are you actually looking at pelvic MRIs or prostate MRIs? Are you even getting them?
So, our practice, I think it's, I was going to a national conference and it's very regional. And I could be wrong, but I believe, like in Tennessee, the urologists there are getting MRIs on almost everyone before their first biopsy. Here in Colorado, that is not happening. We're doing maybe a little more of that, but maybe a year or two ago, I tried to start doing that and I got too much pushback from insurance companies. And so, they're smart. They make things hard for us and we don't do it, so they don't have to pay for it. I think it's regional. So if you have an MRI beforehand and you're getting a Gleason grade 3+4 and 4 cores, and but it shows maybe seminal vesicle invasion, yes, maybe that's someone I might be considering getting a PSMA scan. But in general, the only people we're getting, I would say the vast majority up until now, at least for Colorado urology, the vast majority of patients who are getting MRIs are patients on active surveillance who you're getting a 3 month or 6 month MRI who've never got an MRI. Does that make sense? Very few of our patients have an MRI going into this discussion.
I feel like I'm doing this completely wrong. I don't know.
I think
I'm
it's
starting
actually
to
a good
change my
idea.
practice a little bit here.
No, I think, if someone had an elevated PSA, and the ideal way would be to get an MRI first before a biopsy. And so we would have these MRIs at that cancer consult and we would know, making up our plan. Insurance and plays a role in all this, as we all know. I have found lately, as I'm ordering more, I haven't had le less and less pushback. In a year from now, if we do the same talk, it may completely change what I say.
How do you guys pick the type of PET PSMA scan you're using, right? So there's different radio tracers for PET PSMA scan. Does it matter to you? Or if you don't get where you're looking with one radio tracer, do you switch it to a different one and say, hey, maybe well, this is more real? And it kind of goes back to the question that you were bringing up earlier, Mike, of the sensitivities and the specificities and the clearance, right? As well as how do you make that decision?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's relatively straightforward. We have Pylarify in-house, and that's what we use. I tend to not give too much thought to small differences in sensitivity and specificity between different radio tracers, and tend to just order Pylarify for all of our patients.
I've listened to Phil Ku, who's Dr. Phil Ku, who's down in Arizona. He's sort of an expert in this stuff, and he says there's no real differences as far as he can tell, and he reads these for a living. That being said, I have no choice again, right? So we do not have our own scanner. It's not like I was involved in some committee to decide which one to use. And we actually use the gallium one, which is what Health One, where we're getting most of them are. There's clearly some theoretical differences between the two, with potentially urine excretion and finding it in the prostate bed and maybe less energy so you can spatially recognize it more. I think that's the difference between science and the art of medicine. I think it really depends on who's reading it. And as an ordering physician, unfortunately, I have no control on who's reading it. And also, I have no idea really how good they are. I hate to say that, but that's a real issue that I have. And I was actually just talking to Minaj about this yesterday on a phone call. I was like, I'm a little disappointed with my reads, but I have no control over it.
It goes back to the false positives, right? So how do you, in any patient that's newly diagnosed and you see these rib lesions, Ben, you and I have talked about this a while ago, is how do you guys interpret these rib lesions? Do you, in the right patient, do you say that this is real and you're going to assume that it's true and treat them as oligometastatic disease? Or do you say, rib lesions, not worried about it, we're going to move on?
Mean solitary rib lesions, nothing else, is false, is a false positive almost 100% of the time.
So, Damien, let me push you. Okay. So you're a surgeon, right? By training. I'm not. I purposely went to a specialty where I wouldn't have to use my hands because I'm terrible with everything with that. But you let's say you have a patient, you're deciding between surgery and radiation, right? You might send them over to the radiation oncologist for an opinion so that they can make decisions between, what's the best definitive modality. Now let's say you order that PSMA PET scan, right? And it shows three bone lesions in the ribs, right?
Oh, three. Oh, so multiple bone
I'm
lesions
gonna
in the
give you
rib.
two or five. We'll make it two or make it
More than one. Okay.
two bone lesions in the ribs.
Yeah.
Now, patient's like, yeah, I fell on my ribs. I was a construction worker, right? Might have broken them, might not have never got evaluated, right? But it hurt for a couple of weeks. So, of course, that could be trauma. We know trauma to the ribs can cause these false positives on PSMA PET scans. It's been well discussed out there in the GU space. But does that influence your decision if you have an potential oligometastatic patient, a potential not, to do a prostatectomy or to do definitive radiation in those patients? How are you viewing that when it comes to the potential false positives?
It doesn't make a difference between surgery and radiation. All right. I really always leave that up to the patient 100% of the time. I'm a surgeon. I never try to force what I do like on the patient because I truly believe in general, radiation and surgery have basically equal outcomes. There's differences, but you look broadly, they're basically equal outcomes, right? And so who am I to force side effects on a patient, specific side effects on a patient. That's the way I look at it. That being said, if they're choosing radiation, sometimes I want to write oligometastatic on that form so I can give them different drugs. I'll leave it at that and you guys can
So you're
interpret
talking about
what
intensification
I'm
hormonal
saying.
therapy, right? Intensifying hormonal therapy in those patients.
Exactly right.
Absolutely. And
And so I'm
so
using it, I'm not looking to prove that it's a false positive. Does that make sense? It's
totally.
on the straight. So I use it in that sense. Am I going to radiate those spots? Probably not. That's up to the radiation oncologist. Do I believe they're real? Probably not. Especially if there's no CT scan finding associated with the uptake of the tracer. If it's ribs plus other reasons, other areas, then it doesn't make a difference, right? Like you're going to treat.
So where
So,
do you
yeah.
see false positives besides the ribs? Is it just the ribs that we talk about the
You can say
most?
lymph nodes, lymph nodes. The problem is I don't know lymph nodes in general. And supposedly radiologists are supposed to be able to look at, is it if inflammation, it should be more bilateral versus unilateral. And these are things I'm hoping the radiologist is looking at. Every once in a while I'll look at it, but I am not a radiologist and I've looked at maybe 50 in my life, and I don't have the experience to do that compared to someone who's looked at thousands.
So Mike, you don't know Damien, right? You guys are never going to clinically cross paths, but maybe at meetings and stuff. So same question from the medical oncology perspective. Bone lesions in the ribs, maybe one or two. We'll make it a little bit easier for you. You can make a decision there. And then maybe some lymph nodes that may or may not be inflamed, they may or may not be real, right? So a little bit low, like you have a very bright prostate, super PET avid. You got a couple pelvic nodes that are very mild, right? Very mild SUV uptake in comparison. And then maybe these rib spots. What are your thoughts? Are you thinking someone's coming to you? I met my surgeon, I met my radiation oncologist. They're both talking about their own modalities, right? So I need you to come in and kind of be the tiebreaker. So how are you going to counsel a patient like that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think, you know, that's where medical oncologists do sometimes fall in this discussion as kind of an unbiased arbiter between the rad onc and the urologist. You know, I agree with a lot of what Damien says around kind of a more generous interpretation of some of these potential false positive spots, particularly for patients who are going to undergo radiation therapy. So I have two main thoughts. One is, you know, a lot of how I interpret some of these, you know, very small rib lesions or scant lymph node activity on PSMA PET comes down to my pretest probability. And so if I have, you know, an intermediate risk patient with, you know, multiple rib lesions and a ton of lymph node metastases, you know, that's a situation that doesn't quite fit with the clinical scenario. I'm going to be more suspicious of any positive PSMA PET findings in lower risk patients, generally speaking. And if it's a higher risk patient, or frankly, a patient who's inclined toward prostatectomy, I'm going to do everything in my power to try to elucidate whether or not those rib lesions are real, or those lymph node lesions are real. And typically that would involve an MRI. Almost certainly, you know, universally, these lesions are too small to practically biopsy, particularly in community settings where we don't necessarily have access to super high fidelity interventional radiology the way many large cancer centers might. And so I really rely on MRI findings to guide, you know, whether or not these lesions are real in conjunction with my pretest probability as determined by the patient's Gleason grade.
So I'm curious how often, let's say you have a patient that presents with advanced disease based on a couple of rib lesions or even local lymph nodes, not an ideal surgical candidate for whatever reason, and you know they don't get radiotherapy, and you start them on systemic therapy, whether it be triplet, doublet, whatever you want to do, but they're a younger patient with higher Gleason score, and then you repeat your PET PSMA scan. How do you interpret your changes? How does that change your original thought process? Do you ever say, well, you're changing X amount based on the PET imaging, and now we should probably relook at the whole thing. Maybe these rib lesions are really not real, and then we actually should do surgery, or we should really think about radiotherapy. Like, how are you utilizing this imaging modality in that sense?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, that radiation has, you know, such robust data in both in localized prostate cancer, you know, emerging data in oligometastatic prostate cancer. Generally speaking, I have a relatively low threshold you know, encourage these patients toward definitive radiation to the prostate and all oligometastatic sites of disease. Typically, I'm not using a repeat PSMA PET to make that determination. I would leave that up to my radiation colleagues. In practice, I don't know that they're getting repeat PSMA PETs. The way I would interpret it is I'm getting a staging PSMA PET to show me where all the macroscopic sites of disease are. Perhaps I'm starting systemic therapy with doublet, most likely, in most of these cases. And I know the disease is under control, and I know, you know, we're not going to see, you know, increased growth or new lesions on PSMA PET because their PSA is declining. And typically, we'll refer these patients either for upfront radiation or for radiation later down the line, should they have a good response. In those cases, yeah, we're getting a repeat PSMA PET after 3 or 6 months of therapy to see if things have shrunk down, to see if the radiation plan would potentially be, you know, better tolerated, or they're able to radiate lower volumes of tissue and so forth.
Interesting. You're not doing PET PSMA scan while they're on systemic therapy as often, it sounds like. I'm curious, Damien, what are your thoughts, and Ben, afterwards, if you can share your thoughts.
This is controversial, right? So this is really clear of how it's prognostic, what you should do. we can go down the rabbit hole of when you should be doing it after lutetium. I mean, there's a whole rabbit hole we can go down here, and there's no clear, as far as I can tell, there's no clear guidance. There's little bits, hints here and there. You know, something just came out, if you're doing radiation to Mets, that you should be doing a PSMA scan in 9 months. If you're doing it before then, it may show disease that's not there at 9 months. So when to do these things is unclear. It's evolving. I can tell you what I do in general. If I'm starting, forget about the oligo mess. If I'm starting something on systemic therapy, triplet, doublet, doesn't matter. Usually I am trying to get a repeat PSMA scan when the PSA nadirs. 3 months, but not right away. So if it nadirs in 3 months, I'm not getting it in 3 months. I'm waiting 6 to 12 months. That is where I'm getting the most pushback from insurance companies. A lot of times they won't do it, but I like to have a new, like a new slate. So if things change, I compare it to this one, and I know maybe it's a new site of disease that wasn't there before. Maybe, you know, like theoretically, that's what I like to have. That's where the most pushback is, and I'll usually wait 6 to 12 months minimum after starting systemic therapy before getting a repeat PSMA. I believe the guidelines want you to do imaging yearly on these patients. Bone scans and CAT scans are useless, to be blunt. I've never seen a progression of disease with a non-rising PSA on a bone scan and CAT scan. I have found maybe three patients recently, one with increasing lung mets with completely undetectable PSA on a yearly PSMA scan. So I think it's important. I think you'll catch some, rarely you'll catch someone. I don't know how to use it in terms of adjusting if it hasn't decreased as much as it should. Let's say, you know, if it's a PSA, a year later, the PSMA scan still shows some disease. I don't know what to do about that versus showing no disease, which is really what you'd like to see. I don't change therapy at this point if I see stuff, as long as their PSA is undetectable.
And you don't radiate those sites if they're still there.
No, I don't. So let's take a step back. I've been thinking about this. So I just had a patient yesterday. He's actually going to end up getting, he's going to get lutetium, but he's metastatic castrate-resistant prostate cancer. I got a repeat. His PSA is slowly rising, but it's still like 0.15. His repeat PSMA scan shows decreased disease everywhere except for one L1 met, which increased from 15 to 40. So I actually talked to my radiation oncologist, like, should we radiate that one spot? That is clearly where this disease progression is coming from and nowhere else. And we had a discussion and we thought we probably would do, he wasn't having any pain. If he was having pain, we were going to do it. But we thought since he still has disease other areas, but that's decreasing, but still has SUVs in the 5 to 7 range, we would do lutetium. This is where the art of medicine. There's no right answer here. I love talking to other people about that because I mean we're all practicing in our own little silos, and I love to hear what other people do. And
Yeah, Manoj, would you have radiated that spot?
I would have radiated that
I
spot.
would have radiated it, but I don't know why. I just feel like I would have. But yeah, I don't
I
know.
would have. I agree. I mean, to me, that specific patient, I would have radiated with the SUV being that high, even though he's asymptomatic. I worry that that spot's the one that's going to progress, and he's
It
going to
is.
be,
That's the one that's progressing.
and I would give him the chance of Pluvicto later. But I mean, obviously, this is not
Yeah,
geared
we
towards
talked
very
about it. We were
specific
like, what
patients.
should we do? Yeah. And he also said I could radiate it in the middle of Pluvicto. I was like,
Now, see, Damien, I think you're right. You don't need to justify anything. You know how many times I get in trouble at all the academic roundtables, and I'm like the guy, the cowboy from Texas who moved to Tennessee who's doing too much. So I think you're right. So you don't need to defend yourself. I think me and Manoj are wrong, but it's
No.
funny we're on the same page.
No, we're all, I mean, I love to hear, yeah, there's no
Well,
right, this is the problem, there's no right answer,
there's
right?
no right
There's
answer.
not a right answer.
Yeah.
But would you have radiated? I'm curious to get your perspective on this. For this specific patient, would you have done the same, or what would you have done?
Yeah, so in this case, it sounds like oligo progressive disease, and its PSA was rising, correct?
Yeah, it's rising.
Yeah, so I actually think lutetium is reasonable here. You know, given that lutetium's super well tolerated, I think it'd be reasonable. If the patient was going to be considering something that was less well tolerated, maybe like cabazitaxel or docetaxel, I may be more reticent to change systemic therapy in that context and may be more inclined to recommend a local approach with external beam radiation. But I think for well-tolerated systemic therapies, I think I would favor changing therapy in a patient who's obviously progressing, even if it is oligometastatic or oligoprogressive.
And then how often are you doing imaging? What's Tennessee like?
See, I think Damien is maybe teaching me something here. So I'm ordering PSMA PETs on everyone who is, I'm concerned about biochemical recurrence that might be now, you know, metastatic, right? I'm ordering them on, we talked about that unfavorable risk, curative intent patient or greater. And I'm ordering them, you know, kind of prior to Pluvicto decisions, right? So prior to lutetium decisions. As far as my patient who is on frontline hormone therapy with, maybe they got docetaxel, maybe they didn't. They're an ADT and they're an androgen receptor signaling inhibitor. I'm following PSA and I am not ordering PSMA PETs yearly. I've been ordering CT scans and bone scans yearly to try to pick up on something that's maybe more neuroendocrine in nature that may not be secreting PSMA. I don't know that that's right. And I'm certainly not finding anything whenever I order those imaging. So I've been doing that. That's kind of how I learned to do it, right? When I was in training, that's kind of how I continue to do it. That's how I've been justifying it. But maybe Damien's finding more things than I am. And he's not, I've heard this before. I was on a conversation with one of the head radiation oncologists at a large academic center outside our state about 2 months ago, who said the same thing. They've converted their CT bone scans to PSMA PET scans in that setting, because they are finding some patients with a PSA that's zero, still having some avidity on some scans and progressive lesions, which to me, I always thought if the PSA is not above 0.3, 0.4, you're not going to see anything, which I think is the majority of the cases. But I think now this is not the first time I've heard it. And now I'm wondering, should I be doing a little bit more PSMA PETs than the conventional imaging, which we all know is in general less sensitive unless you have one of those 12% of prostate cancers that may not be PSMA avid. Manoj, are you more in line with your colleague across the city over there, or are you more in line with me?
I got to say, more in line with Damien. I think we're doing far more PET PSMA imaging than conventional imaging. I just don't think that we find as much in the conventional imaging, you know, especially in the younger, higher Gleason score patients. Like, these are not patients that I'm going to take any chance in just doing conventional imaging, right? So they're all getting PET PSMA imaging. I am curious that you hit on something that was important, which was the level of PSA and when you're using your PET PSMA imaging or any of those. Do they actually correlate? Do you wait if someone is actually having biochemical recurrence after they had their initial prostatectomy or initial definitive therapy? I see Gaming shaking his head no, but do you wait to say that they need to hit a threshold of X in order to say that I'm going to do an imaging at this point?
So I probably see the most of these patients, is my guess, as a surgeon, right? Because that's the patient population we're talking about. SAS post radical prostatectomy, PSA is rising, right? So this is where the arc comes in a little. In general, my default will be as soon as it starts rising, we're getting a PSMA. But let me take a step back. I like the Decipher post RRP test, right? And that gives me a little idea if they're low, intermediate, high risk. High risk, any risk of any really change in detectable PSA, they should be getting radiation. So no matter how low it is, I'm getting a PSMA scan before I radiate them, because that will, even if it's only a 10% chance of finding something, it completely changes your management, right? In a huge way. If they're low risk and I can wait for their PSA to hit 0.2 or even 0.4, and it doesn't make a long-term difference in their outcome, I might wait. Does that make sense? But in general, I think the default is, if you're thinking about radiation, you should be getting a PSMA scan before you do it, no matter what that PSA is.
So Damien, how does it change your management though? So say you find something.
Lymph node, bone met. Who know, like what, like, you know, now.
So let's say you find a bone met. You find, you know, you have a patient who had a prostatectomy.
Right.
PSA has been rising. It's now 0.3.
You were going to do a radiate. You would have just radiated the prostate bed.
Right.
Plus or minus lymph nodes, depending on your radiation oncologist. They may not defaultly do lymph nodes. Let's say it's just a lymph node. Now I'm giving them hormone therapy, which I may or may not have before. Right. Probably getting doublet hormone therapy, and I'm going to give them radiation. Same thing if it's one or two. Any oligometastatic disease, doesn't matter where it is, that's basically what I'm going to do. radiate all the spots, give them intensive hormone therapy. How long of intensive hormone therapy? I don't know. No one really knows. My default would be 6 months, depending how they're tolerating it, up to 12 months. If they're tolerating well, longer might be better. But if they're miserable and their quality of life is bad, I say 6 months is enough, especially with intensive. Can I take a step back? Do you guys really think 12 to 15 to 10%, whatever you look at, are PSMA negative?
Not in this setting of the disease.
Okay, so I'm wondering if, like, when I hear these, because I've caught two people in
Yeah.
the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, and I'm just wondering, maybe that's more oncologists see it more because you guys are seeing, you know.
Yeah, Damien, I think it's the vision criteria, patient population, post-taxane, post, all that other stuff,
Okay.
right? So I agree with you. It's not in this patient population. You're right about that. But I want to press you on one more thing, and I know we're going to get short on time. And Manoj, you got to keep us on track because that's your job, not mine. Because you're the organized one. But so you got a prostatectomy, you're a great surgeon, and you got everything, right? Because you're the best surgeon in
Yeah.
Colorado. You got it all. You got a PSMA PET for the rising, and you see two bone lesions, right? Let's say there's one on the spine, one on the femur. Okay. Are you going to definitively radiate the pelvis and do SBRT to the bones, or are you just going to do SBRT to the
No,
bone?
probably just SBRT to the bones and see what
I think that's
happens.
controversial. Yeah. I don't know.
Very
What's
controversial. And what's controversial too is, do you
yeah.
actually give hormone therapy or not? Because there is some data pointing out that maybe well, just hormone therapy alone, not doublet therapy, we don't know, may just be delaying it. So if you look, the failure-free survival when you're eugonadal appears to be about the same when you're adding hormone therapy. So it may not be doing anything. We don't know. So that's where I think doublet therapy might help, intense hormone therapy, but we don't know if adding hormone therapy works or not in this setting. But yes, I am
Right.
radiating everything. But not where, not the pelvis, most likely.
Mike, what's the medical oncology perspective on this? What would you do?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of, what Damien's saying. I think where I probably differ the most is I believe, in the biochemical relapse setting, I believe that every patient is entitled to an attempt at a PSMA PET-directed salvage therapy approach. And to me, extrapolating from STAMPEDE, that's definitive radiation to all of the known sites of disease. Whether or not you include standard, salvage pelvic radiation, I usually defer to the radonc. Typically, the radoncs I work with do not do just empiric salvage radiation to the pelvis, unless there's a compelling reason to do so or there's PSMA avidity there. And I give that radiation in conjunction with 2 years of doublet, specifically with abiraterone. Now, because I want every patient to have a chance at a PSMA PET-directed salvage, I do tend to wait until the PSA is over 0.2. Certainly don't want to miss the early salvage window at 0.5. So between 0.2 and 0.4, I get a PSMA PET, and in parallel, I'm referring that patient to radiation oncology and starting ADT Abby.
It's really interesting with the treatment intensification. We're hearing anywhere from 6 months, maybe ADT alone, all the way to 2 years with ADT plus Abby plus Pred, depending on the patient characteristics. So obviously,
I started
we
at 2 years. I
use
started at 2 years. And
it.
that's really where I started with all my patients. And hormone therapy is not great. And it has,
Nope.
and I just don't know what to do. So I started doing less and less. And maybe I'm making a mistake. I don't know.
And it
No, I
also
think it's very
depends.
much tailored, right?
Yeah, it depends very much on what you find on that PSMA PET. If there's really, suspicion for oligometastatic disease, I certainly push for the 2 years. If there's like a lymph node or a little ditzel of radiotracer avidity in the prostatectomy bed, I think you could probably get away with less.
And so just, as we're concluding here, my thoughts are, because I always have to say my thoughts, but I think
Well, I have one question
oligometastatic. Okay, go ahead.
I was
Go
going to
ahead.
ask, what is the situation when you're not using PET PSMA imaging? Is there a situation when you're saying that I'm not going to do a PET PSMA image?
When I take out the
You,
kidney for kidney cancer, basically
I mean, I
say,
think
I
maybe
can't think
for,
of one right now. I'd love to
well,
hear it.
it's follow up on taxanes. I'm not using PET PSMA in that setting. It's follow up on those types of therapies as the disease progresses and you're more worried about that 15 to 25% of patients that are going to have that neuroendocrine-like differentiation. But in these early phases, where especially where MedOnc and urology have that Venn diagram of shared care, where sometimes urology is doing that care, the PARP inhibitors, the hormonal therapies, right? Even now, lutetium, I think that's a great space for PSMA PET. And I think as we move forward into the taxane space, I think CT scans are probably more appropriate. That guides our data the best, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Manoj, am I wrong?
No, I don't think you're wrong. I agree. I don't know that there's a scenario where I would not use PET PSMA imaging outside of what you were elucidating. But in, you know, early, especially for all the patients that are being diagnosed up front, PET PSMA imaging has been my go-to therapy. Now I'll let you finish your concluding thought, Matt.
Okay, so you know, I think I lean a little bit on Mike here. I am kind of arguing for most of my patients to get 2 years if I really do think they're oligometastatic. And I do actually think a lot of my patients in that situation are going to get pelvic irradiation, even if there's nothing of AVID there. And this is the pros and cons, right? That is a very toxic therapy. It's, you know, it's many weeks of a man's life, right? Having to do this. They might now, they've already had surgery. They're more likely to have bowel issues, urinary issues. So we don't take it lightly, and not everyone does it, right? But I'm also concerned about that under-treatment effect that PSMA PET can cause, right? We're seeing things that most of our data is based on conventional imaging, and that never would have seen. And we would have irradiated those guys' pelvises, right? So part of me is wondering if we're going to under-treat people if we're not irradiating those few cells that may still be remaining in the pelvis. So I do think it's for everyone. I think it's a good shared decision-making. It's the perfect time where it's a conversation, but at least we're talking about, even if there's nothing there, radiating the pelvis and then doing SBRT to those kind of oligo PSMA avid sites, and then doing ADT and 2 years of an ARSI, generally abiraterone, but we've done all of them at our site with our urology colleagues, right, who give a lot of those hormonal therapies in Nashville. So I think that's kind of how we're approaching it. But again, we really look to more data because all of our data doesn't really fit perfectly into the box. That really is the real world discussion that we're having today, right?
So to Ben and Damien and Mike, so to kind of summarize for our listeners, we're saying PSMA imaging should be used upfront. You need to risk stratify your patients based on low risk, intermediate, unfavorable, however criteria you're used to stratifying these patients. And then at least get a yearly PET PSMA imaging. Did we get that right? At least based on our experience?
Sounds good to me.
Try to get a yearly. We'll see what the insurance says, but yes.
I haven't been doing it, but I'm a convert. Damien sold me, so.
I'll be honest. You know, I was just at a conference and people were saying you shouldn't do it because it costs society too much money. And I thought to myself, but my job is to treat the patient in front of me, not save.
Yeah, that's Medicare's job, right? That's their
exactly.
job. We all have our jobs, right? So if they're going to tell us we can't do it, then we won't do it, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, I definitely want to thank our guests today, Dr. Damien Soares, Dr. Mike Latanzi, and of course, my co-host, Ben Garbazy, for joining us in this lively discussion about PET PSMA imaging in prostate cancer. Thank you all for listening to us. Follow us on X at Oncology Decoded, as well as email us at podcast@oncologydecoded.com.